WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
The Trump administration has upended the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. So Illinois is stepping up to fill the void.
My whole career has been working in Democratic politics, and I would have run as a Democrat had the process been open.
When a colleague chooses his family, that shouldn't be a moment for division. It should be a moment for understanding and unity.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. It's Friday, so let's break down the big stories of the week in our weekly news recap. Democrats aren't happy with Congressman Chuy Garcia, and now there's a new contender running for the 4th District seat. Plus, Chicago City Council is saying no more to some hemp products, and there's still drama brewing in the city budget debate.
The city budget battle over at City Hall is heating up in a big way.
There's less than a month to go until the mayor and city council need to close a $1 billion shortfall.
The plan comes from 26 moderate and conservative alders.
Mayor, you need to stop and listen to the aldermen. You need to stop and listen to taxpayers and start doing what's right by them.
Why are they working so hard to protect the people who already have their protector, which is Donald Trump?
Before we get into it, one of our panelists, Chicago Sun-Times politics reporter Mitchell Armantrout, is right here with me. Hey, Mitch.
Great to see you, Sasha.
Good to see you. I'm glad you're here because you've got a brand new story out today. It's regarding ComEd. We didn't get to it in the recap, of course, but you're sharing some good news here, I think, for lower-income Chicagoans.
Yeah, it's a little relief for folks who might have trouble covering their heating bills over the winter. I actually just opened my own last week, and wow, it's going to be a long winter.
yeah.
And what ComEd has rolled out this week, and it'll start January 1st, is a low-income discount program. This is something that was passed as part of a state law a few years back to try and improve energy affordability for folks. And what it'll do is cut some people's bills by more than half, depending on their income level. This is specifically for folks who are at or below the federal poverty level, up to three times that level.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot. And you report in your story that electric bills have jumped about 15% in Illinois this year, and it's due largely to the increased power demand for the data centers behind all that AI.
Right. You're hearing about these all the time now. There's, you know, that's kind of the big conversation.
Yeah.
And downstate, there's new data centers popping up. There's one, obviously, that's created some controversy in South Chicago.
Yes.
And these just giant data centers that eat up a lot of electricity and basically increase the cost for everyone on the grid.
Yeah. My bills are high, too.
Exactly. Yeah. They're only going to keep on going up because you know, this is kind of the future, or at least the U.S. economy is hoping it is. So when folks are trying to weather a really long winter with high bills, the idea is that this will help at least make ends meet for some people.
Yeah, this discount program comes at a good time of year, that's for sure.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's already sub-zero, or at least feels like today.
Exactly. All right, thank you, Mitch.
Thank you.
Now let's get into the weekly news recap with our full panel. Mitchell Armantrout was joined by Carrie Shepard, Chicago reporter with Axios, and Heather Sharone, Chicago politics reporter for WTTW. Now, a group of Chicago alders introduced a new fiscal plan this week, so Heather gave us the details.
They want to do a couple things. The main thing is that they want to eliminate the so-called head tax, which would charge corporations with more than 100 employees $21 per month per employee. And the governor, the entire business community says that this is going to stifle growth and serve as a job killer. Now, the mayor says that somebody is going to have to pay more to fill the city's $1.2 billion budget gap. And he says it shouldn't be working class Chicago. And so this is really the only other option, the mayor says, and that is why we do not have a budget.
Well, let's hear it from the mayor himself.
I think it's pretty straightforward here that we can either balance this budget off the backs of working people or challenge 3% of the largest corporations in the city of Chicago to put more skin in the game.
So he flatly rejected this alternative budget plan.
Right, because it would hike garbage fees on Chicagoans. So right now, if you live in Chicago, you pay $9 a month to get your trash and recyclables hauled away. It costs the city $37.50 every month to take to do that.
Right.
So this group of alder people says, look, this is too high a subsidy. We need the money. It should rise to $18 per month for most people. And seniors who now pay $4.50 should pay $9 a month. Mm-hmm. Now, the mayor has said he will veto any plan that does this, which means that the city council would need 34 alder people to override his veto. There are not 34 members of the city council who would agree to this proposal, which means that we are locked in a stalemate.
Mm. How did other alders respond to this plan?
Well, you know, it's also a complicated plan because not only does it remove the head tax, it moves a bunch of pieces around, and it increases what the city is sort of voluntarily paying towards its pensions, and it changes the way the city is doing its TAC increment financing surplus. It's, mm-hmm. it's really complicated. And if it's like a Jenga tower. You pull out one piece, you know, maybe the whole thing's collapsed. But if you pull out one piece, maybe you lose two alder people. And that means when you're talking about a budget that is likely going to pass by the narrowest possible margins, leaves very little room to sort of negotiate without sort of blowing the whole thing up.
Right. Carrie, I'm curious, what are your thoughts here on this budget battle we're seeing here in the city of Chicago?
Yeah, it's slightly new terrain here for us in Chicago. Historically, as we all know, it usually was like a 48-2 vote on the budget. It usually got through. I think we may forget a little, well, I'm sure Heather and Mitch don't, but the history that there has been a head tax actually in Chicago before. This was something that former mayor Rahm Emanuel campaigned very hard to get rid of in an appeal to the business community.
Right.
And did in 2014. It should be noted, however, it was much lower. It was much lower than $21 per employee per month, which is quite a bit. I think that's a big, hard pill that's to swallow, especially if the governor's not on board. And we've already seen some big businesses. I think, notably Citadel, Ken Griffin, that was more of a political politically motivated move, I think, probably. But we've seen places, leave Chicago, and that's not something we want or can technically afford. But this is not a new stance for the mayor. This is who he is. When he says, where do we get the money? He says, tax the rich. And so he's saying, I'm not going to charge people who are already struggling economically. People are already figuring out how to pay the bills. What? I can't pay my trash fee? Yeah. I mean, that's like a basic thing that people don't, that's your bottom line every month.
For sure. Mitch, how confident are you that the mayor and aldermen can actually reach a compromise before the end of the year?
I would like to say I'm 100% confident, but
you're not.
It's unprecedented days, seems like. I don't, Heather, you might know better than I do. I mean, has there ever been like a government shutdown in Chicago?
Oh,
no, there has not. And, every year we see the General Assembly sort of miss the deadline to adopt a budget for the state. Now, that is normal, I would say, because the state has the ability to continue operating and to continue paying people, even if they don't adopt a budget. The city does not have that authority. So if there is no budget deal on December 30th, people are going to not get paid. Mm. And that is 30,000 city workers, trash pickup is going to grind to a halt. This is not a situation where, like, yeah, December 30th is the deadline, but actually, no, it's not.
Like it is a hard deadline.
It is a hard and fast deadline. So at some point between now and Christmas, I would imagine that, you know, that prospect will concentrate the minds of people on all sides of this disagreement.
Now, the budget was not the only thing on the city council's agenda this week. Alders were also debating banning hemp products. Mitch, update us on that.
Right. These hemp products, they're actually one of those Jenga pieces that Heather was talking about that was pulled out of Brandon Johnson's budget proposal. These hemp products, you see them in gas stations, convenience stores, increasingly in bars and restaurants now, and beverages. Effectively speaking, it's marijuana. It makes you feel high, just like marijuana does, but technically speaking, it's not, because it's very smart people figured out how to concentrate THC from hemp into these products to kind of skirt through some federal legislation from a few years back. So they've gotten really popular. They're totally unregulated. The mayor wanted to tax and regulate them to generate about $10 million for his budget proposal. The federal government pulled that Jenga piece because a federal ban is set to take effect next year.
Next November.
That was kind of a surprise tucked into the spending bill that reopened the federal government last month. So basically, there's this entire industry that's grown to be, it's estimated at somewhere around $1 billion a year on these hemp gummies and beverages that you see everywhere. Now, that industry is basically going to be outlawed a year from now at the federal level, barring more action in Congress. But Alderman Marty Quinn wants to ban those in the city right now, essentially. And he put forward that ordinance this week, passed a key city council hurdle. It seems like he's not quite sure how it's going to fare the full city council. Again, like this is something that... now the Illinois Restaurant Association is standing up against this ban because, again, there's been a trend. People are just drinking less alcohol since the pandemic, but these sort of other beverages are becoming more popular.
They're doing well. So if this ban passes, Mitch, I mean, what kind of fine would the businesses be looking at?
Fines are essentially up to $5,000 for any business caught even with these products on their premises, let alone selling them. So it would be pretty devastating for most businesses.
But Heather, I mean, the governor and other state lawmakers, they've supported a ban on these hemp products.
Well, they support a ban on the sale of these products to people younger than 21.
I
they
see.
Essentially want to treat it like tobacco, and that, you know, what sort of adults do is sort of up to them, but they don't want these sort of, you know, gummies and cookies and crackers packaged to look like Skittles and Oreos and that sort of thing, which is what people are sort of, you know, most concerned about. Now, the city's top doctor said, we should absolutely ban the sale of these products to those younger than 21. And with that regulation, let's put a $2 tax on every sale of these products. And that will give us that $10 million. Now, like Mitch said, the federal government said no. And that sort of left this sort of burgeoning regulation effort in limbo, which Alderman Quinn stepped into and said, let's just ban it entirely.
Yeah.
If this ban goes through the city council, it could potentially cost thousands of jobs. It could blow an additional hole in the city's budget.
Do you think it will?
So it's hard to know. The license committee, which advanced it, voted 10-6 to send it. It only takes two Alder people to use some procedural shenanigans to block a vote at the meeting next week. I would anticipate that is something that people are thinking very strongly about doing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was not a normal committee hearing to hear sort of the mayor's people say, yes, we want to ban this sale to those under 21. However, please don't put thousands of Chicagoans out of work before the start of the year. And the committee essentially said, you know what? We don't believe you, and we're going to go ahead and do it anyway. So this is very far from a done deal.
Yeah. Well, cannabis and the $100 million hemp beverage industry bring in a lot of tax revenue, as we've talked about. But you know what brings in more, folks? property taxes. I'm looking at you, Carrie, because I want you to tell us about it.
Because you know how much mine are or what?
Because I looked at your bill personally.
Yeah, right.
And I also know that you reported on a real estate story involving Zillow lately.
Yeah. So Zillow, we all know Zillow, Redfin. This is a real estate online marketplace that everybody scours if they're ever looking.
Every other tab on my laptop right now.
Yeah, exactly. If you're looking for a place, even if you're not, it's kind of fun.
It's kind of nice.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah, we kind of like drive by neighborhoods and just like we'll pull it up.
Absolutely. So Zillow conducted this analysis on one day of the MRED, which is the Midwest Real Estate Data, which is the back end that, you know, agents have access to of all the listings. And they found that of all the private listings, these are kind of also known as pocket listings. These are those ones that aren't marketed, you know, to everyone, that nearly 8% of them were in white neighborhoods. So that's about twice, majority white neighborhoods, that's about twice as many as were in non-majority white neighborhoods.
Interesting.
So their argument is that this is essentially digital redlining. If we recall, redlining, of course, was the, you know, mid-20th century discriminatory housing practice that kept primarily black residents out of certain neighborhoods.
Right.
So this is what they're saying is this doesn't offer a full view of the housing stock available. And this is going to keep people out of certain neighborhoods because their agents aren't looking at these pocket listings. Now,
And so we're clear, you know, if someone's listening, tell us more about the private listings and what the difference is.
Sure. So when you, those wouldn't be on Zillow.
Right. So what we see on Zillow and Redfin is just a fraction of what is actually available.
So these private listings, that's a good question. I'm sorry. So the private listings are, this is a sort of other part of the database that your agent can go into and say, hey, sometimes you'll see like coming soon, or sometimes if you work with an agent, they'll say, hey, this isn't on the marketplace yet, but you know, somebody is going to put this up for sale.
Right.
The other side of that, the MRED is saying, no, we need that. We need that ability because some people have to put up their homes for sale very quickly. There's a death or there's a divorce or, you know, they also, there's something else in there. The between the lines in there is that this is an ongoing thing with Zillow and MRED saying that Zillow, they're saying Zillow just wants to control the marketplace. They want as many listings as possible on their site so they can get traffic, which then leads to revenue. So there's a back and forth on that.
WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Last month, Congressman Chuy Garcia angered a lot of Democrats for announcing his retirement the day after the filing deadline for candidates to enter the race. Mitch, catch us up on what's happening in that 4th district.
It's always kind of interesting when something happens that reminds you that Illinois politics aren't really normal, at least when, you know,
in
outsiders. This is like a very, this has got a lot of attention nationwide for Chuy Garcia stepping down and essentially clearing the path for his chief of staff to get the Democratic nomination for his seat. Now we're hearing from Myra Macias. She's a longtime progressive organizer from the Southwest side. She did a lot of work promoting President Joe Biden's agenda a few years back. And she's going to be running as an independent against Patty Garcia, no relation to Chuy. And we've also heard from 25th Ward Alderman Byron Cincho Lopez. He's flirted with the idea of running as an independent. Again, basically just saying that what Chuy did is kind of old school Chicago politics, really just preventing anyone, not necessarily preventing, but had Chewy announced that he was retiring a month earlier, even a week earlier than he did, we would have seen a flood of candidates turning in petitions.
Right. So does Myra Macias seem like a serious candidate?
I think, you know, any independent, it's a really high hurdle to get on the ballot. She's going to have to get a lot of signatures. It's really tough to do in Illinois. But
she has
until
May, though, right, for signatures, right?
She has until May. Yeah. So then the question is could we see other Democrats jumping into the race maybe as independents?
I think, I think Sigcho Lopez is a good, he's certainly signaled that he wants to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a high bar to clear, especially when you're going up against essentially Chewy Garcia's political organization. Mm-hmm. We're talking about decades of really just loyal street politicians, political workers. So, you know, Patty Garcia, she's obviously going to have a huge edge going into this primary.
Yeah. What do you think about that, though, Carrie? The fact of Democrats being forced to run as independents because of the congressman's last minute announcement.
Well, yeah. I mean, like Mitch says, and this is what all the uproar is about, which is surprising that such a seasoned politician as Garcia wouldn't have might happen. Is that, you know, that it nods to the fact that, yes, old school politics are alive and well in Chicago and Illinois. As Mitch says, an independent, I mean, she's going to caucus with the Democrats, but she's not going to have the support of the Democrats, as Mitch says. I mean, this is Chewy Garcia's, his backing is strong and they're going to go with Patty Garcia. So I'm not sure, but I mean, good for her. Yeah. I mean, she's like, it's like any political, you know, arc. She's maybe just getting her name in the mix now. So maybe she can run later as, you know, maybe next time around she runs and now people remember her name. That's the name of the game.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to something very different, Heather, because you've got updates for us on police misconduct lawsuits.
I do.
Yeah. What's going on?
Well, this week, the City Council's Finance Committee advanced a proposal to pay Robert Smith Jr. $15.4 million after he spent 33 years in prison, convicted of murdering his mother-in-law and grandmother-in-law wrongly. Now, he has been free for a number of years now. He has been declared innocent by a judge, and his case is really one of the last remaining cases tied to the legacy of disgraced police commander John Birch, who tortured hundreds of Black men, to confess to crimes that they didn't commit. And it is one of those cases that I think sort of crystallizes a lot of the problems that the police department is dealing with. If the mayor were here, he would say this all took place in the late 1980s and that, you know, the police department is a different organization now. I think that what makes this case stand out is not only was this man tortured into confessing into the murders of his family members, he is now mentally incompetent, but has been declared mentally incompetent after spending so long in prison. And the other thing is that his lawsuit alleges that former Chicago Police Superintendent Philip Klein was one of the officers who knew he had been tortured by detectives and sort of was complicit in that and complicit in sort of coercing that confession. Mm-hmm. Former Superintendent Klein denies that. He says that, you know, this man is guilty. And up until sort of the last couple of months, the city has been vigorously defending this lawsuit. When it goes to the city council, it passed the finance committee unanimously. So let's assume it also passes the city council with a pretty healthy margin. That means that the city will have paid this year alone more than $200 million.
Wow.
Alone just to men who were wrongfully convicted and spent, you know, probably hundreds of years in prison for crimes they didn't commit. And I talk a lot about sort of how much this costs for taxpayers, and I try very hard whenever I talk about it to remind people that these are families. People who have been just destroyed by
robbed of many, many, many years with a loved one.
Yeah, by documented and verified misconduct that was done in the name of every Chicago taxpayer. And I don't know that we as a city have really grappled about about what that means for us as sort of a community.
When I was reading Heather, I'm sorry, Sasha, I was just, when two things that stood out when I was reading Heather's article is, and you just said it, is like how much longer, how many more, excuse me, of these cases are we going to see tied to Burge, who's been dead for what, almost, you know, a decade or something? I don't know. But I mean, how many more are we going to, yes, the taxpayer part of it, but like, I mean, it's just been going on for decades and decades. And then also that former Superintendent Klein is still getting, what, 200,000 something?
He is the highest paid pensioner of the Chicago Police Fund. And he will collect that pension until the day he dies. Mm-hmm. He has never been so much as accused of misconduct, and you can only take somebody's pension if they're convicted of official misconduct.
Right. Now, Carrie, we often cover budget woes at Chicago Public Schools, but other districts, they're also facing financial challenges. I was telling my team earlier, I've been seeing a lot of like low enrollment stories across the country.
Yeah.
What is going on though in North Suburban, Evanston and Skokie?
So this is District 65. Yes, yeah. Evanston and Skokie. They are in sort of a battle to whether to close one or two additional schools. They're already closing one elementary school next year, Bessie Rhodes, in order to close a like $10 to $15 million budget hole. This budget hole is not a surprise. This has been in the works for, you know, many, many years. In fact, Evanston overwhelmingly passed a referendum, you know, eight years ago or so to raise property taxes to help fund, you know, help put some money in the coffers for the schools. So the issue being that some people say yes to closing two schools is the most financially prudent move. Others say no, one, and I want you to consider other cuts before you cut a second one. As we know very well in Chicago from our school closures here, it's emotional when a school closes.
Oh, absolutely.
It's your community anchor. It's you're forcing families to rearrange their lifestyle, maybe travel farther, leave their friends and their, you know, their community. So that's part of it. But the biggest issue here is that it's a seven member board, but now they only have six members because one resigned last month. And so they've once again, after several meetings, deadlocked 3-3 on whether to close one, whether to close two, which of those elementary schools to close. And they're running out of time because if they want to make this decision before the end of this calendar year, they still have to get like three public meetings in to hear from the community about these closings. So one thing, one development that did happen is they are expected to name the seventh board member in the next couple of weeks. So maybe that could break the tie.
Interesting.
But it's an emotional issue for sure. Many parents I talk to, it's a big deal.
Financial challenges all over the city when it comes to school districts for sure. And I want to stay in Evanston. And look at you now, Heather, because let's talk about Northwestern. They made headlines for their own financial decision.
That's right. So they reached an agreement with the Trump administration to pay $75 million over the next 3 years to resolve charges that the institution had sort of discriminated against Jewish students or had not sort of protected them from anti-Semitic harassment and abuse. And they are Northwestern, which I suppose I should disclose is my alma mater, joins Columbia as one of the two major schools that have reached this kind of agreement. And it's a complicated agreement. And Northwestern has sort of said, look, we didn't agree to do anything that we aren't already obligated to do under federal law. And that includes not using race as an admissions criteria. And of course, we protect our Jewish students. But several provisions in the agreement also change the way the university will handle their trans students. It will ensure, it requires Northwestern to not allow trans students to participate in sports that are not aligned with their gender at birth. And it also requires Northwestern to provide single sex, you know, locker rooms and dorms and that sort of thing. And I think there are a number of members of Chicago's trans community and the wider LGBTQ community that have real questions about what this will mean for trans students at Northwestern and whether that university will continue to be a welcoming place for them.
Well, let's pivot here. Governor Pritzker has been one of President Trump's most vocal critics, Mitch. I want you to just update us on how new vaccine legislation is kind of pushing back against the White House.
Right. So this law that the governor signed this week, it essentially codifies into state law an executive order that he issued back in September, creating an independent state board that will issue its own vaccine recommendations as far as when your infant should get their shots, when you should get your flu shot, who should get it, how old. And the idea is that there are changes a-coming in Washington under the Trump administration, as we've seen this week. The CDC, a panel, is currently debating whether or not hepatitis B shots, whether that recommendation should be given to give hepatitis B shots to infants at birth, which has been the practice for decades and decades and has saved millions of lives, as many studies have shown. There are a lot of vaccine skeptics in the administration. So basically what the governor wants to do and lawmakers have decided to do is have their own body to issue its own recommendations to try and tamp down the noise, whatever noise might be coming from Washington when it comes to long-held and widely proven science behind vaccines and any questions that might be raised about them.
So it looks like from the Associated Press, a federal vaccine advisory committee has voted to end a longstanding recommendation that all U.S. babies get the hepatitis B vaccine on the day they're born.
Right, which is, that's been practice for 30 years, and that's mainstream science does not support that decision.
The aggressive immigration enforcement that we saw in the fall, well, it seems to be winding down, and we're seeing assault charges being dropped against bystanders. Heather, you covered one of those cases.
Well, if you remember, there was a viral social media video of Nathan Griffin, the manager of Chicago's Laugh Factory, being detained quite violently by federal immigration agents. And it was never quite clear sort of how this all began. He was charged with charged in federal court with assaulting a federal agent. Mm-hmm. Those charges have now been dropped. It appears, although it's not entirely certain, that the federal prosecutors were unable to convince a grand jury to indict him, forcing them to drop the charges. And he is not the only person to have been charged and then have those charges dropped.
Right.
And I was explaining this to a friend of mine who is not quite as sort of in the know as I am. It is incredibly unusual for federal prosecutors to bring charges that they cannot convince a grand jury to sustain. This is deeply unprecedented and an indication that the way that the Trump administration is sort of, operating in Chicago and other cities is very different than in recent past.
Right.
So Nathan Griffin, now free. And, I think it is raising a lot of questions about what's going to happen to the people who were charged with impeding a federal agent Broadview, including several candidates for office, including congressional candidate Kat Abu-Ghazaleh and Michael Rabbit, a member of the Democratic Steering Committee here in Chicago. I think it has real questions about whether what will happen in the spring if, as the Sun-Times has reported, this sort of immigration enforcement ramps up once it's, above 40 degrees,
right.
I will say that if you want to truly experience Chicago, you got to do it like in a week like
this. Yeah, you got to do it like this. You see record-breaking Saturdays like the one we saw last Saturday where it was the snowiest November day ever. O'Hare got hit with 8.4 inches. More than 1,000 flights were canceled. Peak Chicago. But speaking of air travel.
Says the Canadian.
Yes. Let's not get into that debate, Carrie. I have said it on these airwaves and I am not afraid to say it again. It is colder here. Anyway, moving on.
Okay.
Speaking of air travel headaches, Mitch, February 1st is supposed to be the absolute deadline for passengers to get the real ID or they're going to face a fine, right?
So right.
Remind us, what IDs other than real ID are accepted?
If you've got a passport, if you've got a global entry card, and
you've
got a couple other ones, you're totally good. May was like, that was everyone, there was this big freak out. I got to get my real ID so I can fly. Turns out that big deadline is now going to actually be next February when they're going to start charging you $45 to go through TSA security. We've seen Illinois Secretary of State Alexi Janulius says his office is trying to beef up their services so folks can go in and get your real ID as quickly as possible. They're trying to streamline things with Cook County Clerk Monica Gordon's office, where you should be able to go to clerk's offices, and they've got cashiers who are only focusing on folks who need their birth certificates, marriage licenses, all these other special documents
that
you need to get your—
And they keep that super center that they opened up in the Loop, right?
On Clark Street. You can go there, and they're getting people in and out with their real IDs pretty quick.
Yeah, trying to get you without paying that $45 fine.
And the TSA upped it. It was $18, and then they jumped up to $45.
Because the real ID is serious business.
It is, and I would say that Secretary Janulius he's really been like, you know, when everyone was like frenzied, as Mitch said, he was like, hold on, like, don't everybody rush out.
Right.
But now it's a little like, wait, actually, no.
Actually, you rush out.
Should go.
Well, speaking of rushing out, it's shopping season, the holiday shopping season. And one beloved shopping experience that seems to have become a little too popular is that Chris Kindle Market, Carrie. What's going on?
Well, we were just discussing it in the break and all of our personal feelings on the Chris Kindle Market. I think it is worth it. It is a holiday tradition Chicagoans should try.
Is it worth that lineup, though?
I don't know anything that's worth that line, I have to say, Sasha. We went to Christmas Carol a couple weeks ago. It was Sunday. It was a very touristy heavy weekend for several reasons. And the line is just like snake, snake, snake. And I was like, I don't know who's waiting in that, especially in weather like this. It wasn't as cold then. Mm-hmm. So the mayor, he lowered the capacity for it. The vendors there got very upset. They said, some of whom told CBS News that their business is down 40% from last year. So the mayor went back and, you know, the mayor's office went back and said, okay, wait, actually we can let more people in. I don't know what the exact numbers are.
They bumped it up to 2,500 people after vendors complained.
Yeah, I mean, it's busy in there. I mean, you're pretty shoulder to shoulder, but like a lot of these businesses, when you go, these vendors, these kiosks, I mean, this is their time. Like, these are very Christmas specific, holiday specific vendors and goods, and so they really probably rely on this business big time.
Well,
and there's also one in Wrigleyville, so if you don't want to do the downtown one, you could go
good
to the Wrigleyville one.
Once the holidays are over, big changes are coming to one of the Loop's oldest and busiest L stations. The State and Lake Station is set to close on January 5th for a three-year, $444 million think much needed renovation. It should be really nice though when it's done, but it's a major inconvenience, no doubt, for some riders over the next few years. I know, Heather, real quick, you have feelings about this.
I do have feelings about this. So I grew up in Edgewater, but went to Kenwood in Hyde Park. So this was one of the stations that I sort of used in my daily commute home. And I'm a little bit nostalgic that, you know, the rotting wood planks and the shaking shaking
stairs. But it's
going
to be so shiny and new now, you know. Think of all the possibilities.
Yeah. It also has a spot in, Chicago cinematic lore. This was the station that was featured in While You Were Sleeping, which is my pick, honestly, for the best Chicago Christmas movie. Breaking news, must credit. and I don't know, it's just a little bit of, you know, old time Chicago, that's a little bit disappearing.
Well, here's something else you can do. Next time you do take the L, you're going to hear something a little bit new. It's Chance the Rapper. Mm-hmm. He's recorded two announcements for a new Enjoy the Ride campaign, playing at train stations for several weeks.
Hey, CTA riders, it's Chance the Rapper. Whether you out south, out west, or the north side of Chicago, public transit is always your best option for getting around the best city in the world. Keep supporting CTA and just enjoy the ride.
Just enjoy the ride. Just enjoy the ride.
Okay, we're dancing in studio.
Hey.
Anybody hear him yet? No one had
heard
the chance?
It yet.
I have not heard
Chance.
It.
Yeah. He's a great Chicago
I'm
ambassador.
Listening out. I'm listening out for him.
I'm disappointed. I was hoping he was going to say like, oh, this is Halstead.
Right.
Or, you know.
I think there's a lot of confusion about it because people are like, gosh, that must have taken him forever.
Right.
I know. I saw some headlines. I was like, you better clarify. He's not the new voice.
Right.
Just a couple.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Andrea Guthman, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.